Welcome back into Coach's Corner here on 1230 WSOO. Matt Pocket here with Scott Nason, the host of the game on ESPN 1400, Mondays at 6. Scott, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing wonderful, Matt. Beautiful day here.
It is, isn't it?
The Eastern Upper Peninsula, and certainly lots of local sports to talk about today.
We've not quite had so much of this weather. I mean, the last week or two, it's been getting nicer, but all that wind a couple of days ago.
It's been very windy, but the good news is it dries it up quick. The snow's melting, and hey, I want to be outside doing my yard and umping some softball games here in April. So we're on the right track, at least.
Yeah, and that's always the big concern up in this part of the world when it comes to high school baseball, for example, right? It's just so tough to get more than a handful of games in because, let's face it, we are still under a half foot of snow on every ball field in the area.
And it takes a while for the fields to dry up as well. Normally, the earliest you get any baseball or softball games is, you know, late April. We might be able to do that, but certainly we're just happy to have a season. We weren't sure we were going to have any seasons but a month and a half ago, and now we're knee-deep in it.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable how things have gone in the and it's still unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, we're at the one-year mark, really, of all of this really starting to come into the public consciousness in the U.S. It was something that we were aware of, certainly. You know, it had been going on. COVID-19 had been going on in China for some time at that point, but here in the U.S., it hadn't really had its breakout yet. I think Italy had had some problems with it a little bit earlier than the United States did, but it kind of all happened right around this time in the U.S., and boy, everything changed in a hurry.
Yeah, it sure did. I mean, you look at it, it was about a year ago, I think, on Wednesday when the NBA, they shut down their season. And then
yeah,
the day
Rudy
after,
Gobert.
Yeah, Rudy Gobert. And then the day after, March Madness was canceled. And then the MHSAA made the decision to cancel the Winter Sports Championships, which we were a part of. And everything changed that day. It's certainly been a very interesting and newsworthy year, but I feel we're in a much better spot now, obviously, than we were a year ago, and things are starting to get to normal with the vaccines and the sports being played. We're seeing fans in some instances as far as high school sports, so hey, I'm just happy to have the games to talk about because it certainly is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think the most stunning thing about it all was we were sitting there for a few days, maybe even a week, and it was right when playoffs were getting going with a lot of things. WCHA, I'd just gotten back from Bemidji, and in the span of, I think, about 48 hours, you're sitting there and you're just looking around like, what's going to happen? I mean, is anything? If it does, how is it going to go? What are the ramifications of this? I mean, in those early days especially, there was so much that you just didn't know. And I think that was probably the weirdest part because we live in, let's face it, we live in an information age. Everything is at our fingertips. It's there immediately. And here's this thing developing that we know absolutely nothing about. And when it came to people offering up opinions and that kind of thing, you know, my deal at that point, Scott, was just like, everybody shut up because nobody knows anything right now. That's the point. Nobody knows anything.
Yeah, and still, we're still learning about this and best ways to handle it. Obviously, with the vaccines being out, that has helped quite a bit. You know, looking yesterday, the governor talked about opening up the vaccines to pretty much all adults by April. So certainly more positive signs, and it just makes you appreciate what you have, you know, as far as having the high school hockey games on Friday night, Laker hockey, high school basketball, just, you know, anything that resembles something normal, I think, is very much valued right now. And certainly we're very thankful just to have what we have.
Yeah. And I think that to me should be the overriding feeling about all this stuff, right? We're grateful for just having the chance to see this stuff. You know, how many times do people say it in the modern age, right? I mean, you know, we take this for granted, but we really have. And I think, you know, a lot of people still taking it for granted, even with this stuff coming back, because listen, there are very few guarantees in this world.
And so much of it, you know, I work in mental health full-time job there, Matt, and so much of it is just the mental health of, you know, the athletes involved. My son plays freshman basketball, and he was in limbo, much like most of the high school athletes were for months, and just having the ability to get a routine, to go out and practice and play some games. And for broadcasters too, I gotta say, you know, the last month or so, I've been a lot busier doing broadcasts. I know you've been very busy as well, and just it helps get into the routine and just appreciate what you have. And you know, the mental health aspects of this pandemic can't be understated as far as how much that's helped just to, you know, try to get things back to somewhat normal.
Again, I think the suddenness of it all. Matt Pocket, Scott Nason here on 1230 WSOO. It's Coach's Corner. I think the suddenness of it all, right? Because you've got so much happening. You've got events being canceled. You've got people being told, stay home, stay away from everybody, right? And there's that cutoff, there's the isolation, and it all happened like that. It wasn't even just the isolation. It was the instantaneousness of it all. And that, to me, was the most shocking thing about all of this, right? That it was just 1 minute, everything looked like it was, you know, okay, there's a situation that might be on the horizon. 2 days later, it's like, oh, uh-oh.
Yeah, and you thought at the time it was, you know, it was a couple weeks at first in March, and then it got extended to a couple months, and when people thought maybe things would get back to normal in the summer, they did to a certain capacity, and then boom, everything changed in the summer and fall, and we're getting out of it. It's been certainly a tough year for everyone, but 2021 certainly looks a lot brighter than 2020 at this point.
Yeah, it does. Now, we've seen quite a bit of high school basketball. You've probably seen a lot more than I have at this point, but that Sioux High girls basketball team, man, they are good.
They are.
They are good, good.
Winners of 27 in a row, if you go back to last season. I mean, this team is 10-0. They have a big game against DeWitt, which you can hear with Dave Watson later on this afternoon. I mean, this is a team that is very well balanced. You don't have one score that, you know, you expect to score 20, 25 points. They have about six or seven girls that can be leading scorer. They play tremendous defense. That's the strongest suit to the Sioux High girls, is their defense, and just, you know, they know how to win, and there's something to be said about that. This group of senior girls has been winning for a long time. You go back to, you know, elementary school, they've been playing together. They're very well coached. Pat Bennett has done a great job with that program, and certainly Sioux High looks to make their deepest run into the playoffs. You have to go back to 1998 when they made the state semifinals, lost to Detroit Country Day. They had Alice Dusing, one of the best athletes ever to come out of Sioux High in any sport, and this is a team I think that's getting better. They're going to have big tests coming up over the next couple days, taking on DeWitt today and then being at Marquette on Monday, but this team just has a winning mentality. One of the things they probably need to improve on the most is free throw shooting. They did a great job last week, or a couple weeks ago at St. Ignace when they made a bunch of shots there at the end to beat the Saints twice, and that's a big mark for them, is beating St. Ignace twice. I don't know the last time that they've beaten the Saints twice in a season. So certainly this, of all the teams in the Eastern Upper Peninsula as far as high school basketball, especially for the girls, Sioux High has the best chance to make a deep run.
Yeah, again, they take on DeWitt today, 1:45, with Dave Watson right here on Radio Sioux. Blue Devils on the road for their next four to close out the regular season. Marquette, Newberry, Petoskey, all of those games coming up here in the next week or so, and then you're into the playoffs already. Scott, this is interesting too, the 27-game winning streak. Everybody except four teams end their season on a loss every year,
yeah,
right? Because everybody qualifies for the postseason. Everybody loses their last game except for the champions, right? So not many teams have an opportunity for those long winning streaks. And it is one of those things that's, COVID has kind of opened up an opportunity for that in a very strange way here, right? But at the same time, I think it's a recognition, too, of how good this team has been over the last couple of seasons. Now going through this season, too, continuing that dominance, you know, they've won a lot of games, and they're going to be a title contender.
And they're playing good teams, and that's the key. Obviously, in the conference, you have St. Ignace, Newberry. Rudyard has a pretty good team. They're 7-3. Rudyard gave the Blue Devils a battle, but scheduling these games like DeWitt and going down to Petoskey and taking on Traverse City at home. I mean, these are schools that have good basketball pedigree, and the Blue Devils certainly at the end of last season were poised to make a deep run, but I think they're even stronger this year. They did lose a couple key players from last year's team, but this is a solid team, and I expect that they are going to make a pretty good run. They're going to face some good teams, obviously, as they move on, but
it's
watch
a tough
out.
District
it
that
is.
They wind up in every year, too. Kalkoska always gives them a game, and
yep.
You know, that's one of the interesting things about all this, because you wind up in these districts, and sometimes these districts kind of provide a team an opportunity to just kind of slide on through to the next round. In other districts, it's a meat grinder right out of the gate, and it never gets easier from there, does it?
Yeah, the Blue Devils should be favored in their district. You have Kalkaskin there, as you mentioned, always a good team. If they get to the regionals, they'll take on an Escanaba or a Gladstone team. Both those teams are good. Potential quarterfinal teams, Frankenmuth, they're undefeated. They're ranked right around where the Sioux is. So there are no easy games once you get to the postseason, but for all the teams, Matt, nice thing about high school sports, regular season, yes, it means something. Conference titles, yes, they mean something. But you want to be playing your best basketball a week from Monday when districts start, and the district matchups will be announced this weekend by the MHSAA, so we'll know who plays who and where. It's going to be a lot of fun. March Madness, we missed it last year, Matt, but we're going to get it this year full time.
EUP Rudyard. That's a good team.
7-3.
That's a good team.
And they're going to have a big battle Tuesday night. I'll be covering that game for you down in Pickford. Pickford and Cedarville. Cedarville knocked off Pickford and this week, so both Cedarville and Pickford have two conference losses. Rudyard just with one, so if the Bulldogs win that game, they'll claim the EUP conference.
Yeah, Bulldogs girls basketball team beating Pickford at home for the first time in a very long time a couple of weeks ago in what was a tremendous basketball game, really well played. That team is for real, and I love what Carlos Molina is doing down there because he's put a renewed emphasis on the younger ages, getting them in the gym, getting them in a regular program, which is something that I don't know if that had always necessarily been the case down at Rudyard, but now they're part of a program from the younger ages, and as they come up, they've got much more experience than maybe they did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, they've been trying to build that program for a while. You go back to before Carlos Molina, Barry Butler, and Marty Terry, and they did a good job to try to, you know, reestablish a winning tradition down there. And you look at that Rudyard Bulldogs girls program, the volleyball team made it to the quarterfinals this season, after last year making it to the semifinals. They have a great softball team, always winning districts and making it to the quarterfinals, I think, a couple seasons ago. So that's a very good girls program down there, and Carlos and Coco Molina, who also helps with the JV, they've done a good job.
Yeah, and there's a bit of fresh paint there too, because they've redone the hardwood floor too. There's a brand new logo at center court that looks dynamite. You know, they kind of had just a really simple logo at center court for a long time. Now they've really spruced it up a little bit, and it's a good look down there. And again, you know, I feel there's a lot of fresh energy down there when I was in that building.
Yeah, both for the girls and the boys. I mean, the boys right now are 10-1, and they could win both the Straits Area Conference and the EUP Conference. They're on top of both, just beating Sheboygan last week, and what Jim Suggett's done with that boys program, along with Tracy Peterson. I mean, they only have, I think, 9 players on the roster, but E.J. Suggett, Tate Besteman with his size underneath, and you have some good freshman play with Cam Peterson. That's another team, I think, of the boys' teams, Matt, has a real good chance to make a deep run, Rudyard Bulldogs. They don't have a lot of players, but they got a good system, and they're winning a lot of games.
They play fast, and they're conditioned well for it. That was one of the things that stood out to me when I saw them a couple of weeks ago play Cedarville. They play with such a fast tempo. They want to get out and run, and one thing that I think might actually benefit them a little bit too, they can play fast and they can outrun anybody, but if they back it down by maybe 5-10% and play with a little bit more control, I think they'll smash teams.
Yeah, and they're very unselfish. They pass the ball a lot. You know, E.J. Suggett is usually the leading scorer on the team, but you got those big guys underneath with Mills and Besteman, and you can't size is so important in high school basketball, and they have size, they have speed, they play very fast, aggressive defense, and that's a team that's not going to lose many games. They will likely be the favorite in their district with Engadine and Newberry. And, you know, I think Rudyard has a good chance to make a good run.
Yeah, I do too. And meanwhile, you've got other teams that have been in the mix. Cedarville numbers are really down there right now. Pickford, always a team that's in the mix. And, boy, they just find a way to keep retooling down there at Pickford. They've done such a good job. And I think a lot of it comes, too, from that football program, right? Because you've got again, a committed program through the younger ages, and Josh Rader does such a good job turning out young talent. Their JV team, you know, went undefeated for, what, 3 or 4 straight years?
Yeah.
Just smashing everybody. And then they get up to the varsity level. They don't play any close games anymore. then those guys, you know, they have these long playoff runs. They've got confidence. They turn that onto the basketball court, and they're ready to go.
There's a lot of good teams in the UP Conference for the boys. Cedarville maybe not getting as many wins as they're used to. Their numbers down, but you can never count out Cedarville in the playoffs. You look at, you know, they have state championship banners in their gym.
Good coaching, too.
Very good coaching there with the younger Duncan. There's been three Duncans over the years, I think over the last 50 years down in Cedarville. Pickford struggling a bit as far as wins and getting their offense together, but they played Cedarville a lot closer last night than the game that I did a couple weeks ago. Brimley, you can never count them out. You know, again, 3-6 on this, or actually 4-6 on the season with their win last night. Coach LeBlanc's done a good job with that program. Detour, another team. You never count out Detour. They're kind of the little engine that could, and they could cause some problems in the district. So I think that district will be very interesting for the boys, EUP, down in Detour. And again, Matt, it starts in 9 days. Can you believe it?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I've got to say, over at Detour, Josh Newell, the forward, stretch four, has probably the prettiest stroke from the wing that I've seen in this area in a long time. That kid can shoot.
Well, and the thing is, with a lot of these smaller schools, not as many players are playing basketball or just sports in general. I mean, you look at Cedarville, I think they have, what, 8 players on their varsity?
Yeah.
You know, Rudyard with 9, so you're having a hard time finding players, so you get what you get out of the players that you have, and Detour's done about as good a job as anyone.
Grant Fountain played as an 8th grader, and I remember he was a small kid, but confident on the ball, had some talent, and just to see him grow, I swear, that kid swallowed a horse at some point because he is in the gym all the time. You can see how much he's bulked up over there at Detour, and my goodness, I remember him as just a tiny little 8th grader,
right,
playing high school basketball, you know, and holding his own. That kid is sculpted now as a senior.
And you see that with Detours and even the smaller schools like Mackinac Island, you get these 8th graders that play up at the varsity. I mean, that's a big age difference in any sport. And just be able to hang and be out there, certainly, you know, 5 years varsity experience, not many players get that.
Yeah. Meanwhile, high school hockey, you saw Sioux High last night. What's your take on the Blue Devils this year after a rough year last year, but improving this campaign?
They're getting better. Last night, certainly not their best effort. I shouldn't say effort, not the best result. The effort certainly was there. Sioux High got down early, 1-0 on a defensive turnover. They tied the game at 1 on the power play. Escanaba got a power play goal to make it 2-1. You thought going into the first intermission, okay, you know, Sioux High didn't play their best hockey, but boy, Escanaba came out in that second period, scored 4 straight goals in the first half of the second period, and Sioux High never recovered. Now, the Blue Devils certainly have a good chance to win a regional championship. They will start their play down in Tawas on Tuesday. They should be favored in that one. If they win, they'll take on Escanaba take on Alpena on Thursday, a team that they did beat in their last game 4-1. You also have Sheboygan and Gaylord in there. So the Blue Devils, certainly Rick Mackey's done a good job to get more players on the roster. I think they have 19 players playing. Last year they had some issues, and they certainly got some great young talent on that team. You have Garrett Gorsuch, who I've been very impressed with as a freshman. You also have Tyler Dunbar, the son of GLIAC Commissioner Chris Dunbar, no stranger to our listeners. So Sioux High's on the right track. They play at Petoskey this afternoon. If they win, they finish 5-5. And overall, that's a pretty darn good season compared to what happened last year. So that program's on the right track, and I think they're in contention for a regional championship here coming up next week.
Yeah, and that was such a tough go last year, and you know, I saw them once or twice, and it's not an overnight project, right? I mean, it was a good team for several years and then really had a drop-off, and that's tough to recover from, but I think they've done a pretty good job with it.
They have, and with Sioux High's hockey program, they're self-funded, so there's so many more responsibilities that the coaching staff and the board has to deal with. It's not just, you know, putting a good product on the ice and winning games. It's just being able to function as a program and to raise money. And certainly a lot harder to raise money during a pandemic, but you know, you saw good crowds at the Big Bear Arena, and so that group's doing a good job with that program. They're certainly back where they need to be.
Matt Pocket, Scott Nason here on Coach's Corner. We're in for Dave Watson here today. Damon Whitten, head coach of the Lakers, joining us in just a little while. Lakers 6-1 winners over Alabama Huntsville last night. Interesting question, and I'm going to pose this to him in just a little bit too, Scott, but the Lakers right now, 12th in the pairwise rankings. Do you think they've got the resume to get into the NCAA tournament as an at-large.
And that's the key, the pairwise rankings. You know, the national polls, while they're, you know, sexy,
goofy.
and they're goofy as far as where the teams are ranked ahead of Lake State. I think Lake State will get in to the NCAA tournament if they obviously win this series against Alabama Huntsville and win one more game. I think if they get to the final of the WCHA and likely take on Minnesota State, but who knows, maybe they won't take on Minnesota State, likely will. I think that's enough with their schedule, their road wins. I mean, you win two games at Bowling Green, you win games at Bemidji. These are all teams that are ranked ahead of Lake State. I think if they do that, they're in a very good position to make their first NCAA tournament since 1995-96.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, and you know, it's been very exciting this year to follow the Lakers. Obviously, fans haven't been able to see them in person, but they've been able to listen to your broadcast with Bill and also watch them online. I had a chance to see them in person for the first time last Saturday, and just, you know, the speed of this team, and just, I haven't seen a Laker team look like that in a very long time, and Coach Witten's done a great job with this program, getting these players invested in his system. You know, it's taken maybe a little longer than fans might have liked to hope, but this is a good team, and they showed it last night.
Yeah, team speed, something that Damon's emphasized for a very long time. I think when it comes to an NCAA tournament at large bid, right, there's two aspects, right? If the season ended today, would they make it? Well, that's a different question than when the season is actually going to end, right? Because you're either scoring points or losing points depending on if you win or lose, right? So what happens between now and when the brackets are actually decided has a big impact on what happens. If the season ended today, yeah, maybe. I mean, that's life as a bubble team.
Sure.
You know, you never really know which way that's going to go. But the season doesn't end today, right? So, I like you said, Scott, I think you've got to win this series, have to take care of business tonight, certainly. Have to win a semifinal game, because if you lose, right, you're going to get knocked back from 12.
Right.
Right. You don't freeze at 12 and just stay there. You get bumped back. So it's kind of down to two things in that regard, right? One, need to build up a little bit of breathing room for when you do get knocked back, right? So that way you don't get knocked back as far. And also, you know, building up points in the first place. I think the other part of it, too, is when you're talking about the bracket field itself, chalk comes in,
yep.
Right? When those favored teams win their conference championships, right? Well, great. You know, if you're the 12th team in line for, you know, an NCAA tournament bid, great, right? But what happens if a Minnesota, who's going to the tournament either way, loses out on the conference championship to, say, a Penn State, who's nowhere near the picture, right? Well, now you don't have the conference champions necessarily, plus the at-larges. You've got all of that minus one spot, because there's a team that don't belong in there, right? You're talking about maybe the 35th team in college hockey, plus your conference champions and the rest of the top 15 or so. So chalk, right? When you're a bubble team, you
yep.
want those favorites to do well to give yourself the best chance, because if underdogs win, that bumps other people down the line.
That's a great point. You see it in college basketball all the time with the bubble teams. And, you know, the WCHA should get more than one team in. You have four teams ranked up in there with Bowling Green and Bemidji, Lake State, and Minnesota State. And, you know, if Lake State finishes second in the regular season, they beat Bowling Green twice on the road, they make the final. I just have a hard time, unless you, like you said, Matt, there's chaos in the other conference tournaments where you have, you know, two or three teams that maybe wouldn't be part of the mix go on a run. And that's the beauty of the conference tournaments is, you know,
yeah.
everybody starts over. And so Lake State, they control their own destiny. I mean, it's in their hands, and they can win themselves in. I mean, we may not even be talking about at-large. Heck, they could win the WCHA. I wouldn't bet against them right now.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting team, and looking forward to tonight's game. They won 6-1 last night against Alabama Huntsville. Damon Witten joining us in just a few minutes here on Coach's Corner. Scott Nason, host of the game on ESPN 1400. Every Monday at 6 o'clock, and also this week, Tuesday, on the EUP Game of the Week on Country 105. You're also here on Radio Sioux. Where aren't you anymore?
I don't know. It's great to be on, Matt, and certainly wish we had more Sioux Eagles games to put on ESPN 1400 with that season, but always happy to fill in for you and Dave during the busy schedule and looking forward to more broadcasts and certainly lots of good things ahead, I think, in the local sports scene here in the EUP.
Looking forward to it. We'll take a timeout here on Coach's Corner. Damon Whitten, head coach of the Lakers, on the way shortly. This is 1230 WSOO.
Community partners in Chippewa County will host a mass COVID-19 vaccination clinic at the LSSU North Center on Friday, March 19th. People meeting the following criteria are eligible. Individuals 50 years or older, 18 years or older who are at high risk, Bay Mills tribal members and BMIC employee households, and any student at Brimley or OCS 16 and older. Please follow Bay Mills Health Center on Facebook or visit the Chippewa County Health Department website to stay up to date on changes and criteria. Eligible individuals are encouraged to sign up now for the March 19th mass vaccination.
Who hasn't felt protective lately? Of our families, our communities, our resources? In times like these, we all fight to make sure our people are safe. But at the American Cancer Society, our people, our community, our family is made up of millions of cancer patients and their families. So keeping them safe takes everyone's help. During COVID-19, help us keep vital resources available to cancer patients. Please donate to the American Cancer Society at cancer.org.
This is Mark Sinangelo, Operations Manager at Sovereign Communications. I've taken over the 1230 WSO morning show during this coronavirus pandemic. We've been providing you with up-to-date news and information concerning COVID-19 and its effects on our community. We've interviewed federal, state, and local officials to help keep you informed, and I pledge that we'll stay on top of this for as long as this crisis continues. So stay safe, stay at home, and just as you have for the past 80 years, know that you can depend on Radio Sioux for the most accurate, reliable news and information from 1230 WSOO.
The Chippewa County Health Department would like to remind residents to continue to practice safety precautions to protect yourself and loved ones against the spread of COVID-19. The vaccine for COVID-19 is becoming more readily available. However, until a majority of the population receives both doses of the vaccine, there continues to be risk of infection. Please wear a mask in designated areas, monitor the size of gatherings, practice social distancing, and wash your hands frequently. For more information on how to protect yourself and others, please visit ChippewaHD.com.
And now back to Coach's Corner with Dave Watson on 1230 WSOO.
No Dave Watson, it's Matt Pocket here on Coach's Corner on Radio Sioux, joined now by the head coach of the Lakers, Damon Whitten. Damon, how are you? Big win last night. Got to be feeling good, right?
Yeah, good afternoon. It's that time of year with playing Walter here, so it's always a fun time to be playing. And as you said, it was a real quality 60 minutes for us. So a good win last night, and sometimes you got to flush a loss and move on, and then that's no different than tonight. You get that good win by a big score. You've got to flush it to be ready to be better here tonight. So we've addressed some things this morning. And guys are out of the rink already and resting up and getting their routines in and get back at it here in a couple hours and then look to be even better tonight.
Yeah, and again, a big win last night, 6-1, really opened it up in the second period. And I thought the start was key, came out with a ton of intensity, really got on them early. And I thought that top line, Calder, Boudon, Viet, I thought those guys really set the tone. Jacob Nordquist, too. Man, I have not seen that kid skate that fast in a long time. He was zooming around out there.
Yeah, Nordy was flying, had a really strong game from the back end. And like you said, though, I think the Boudon line did a really good job. You know, obviously, offensively, they're our top scoring line. So, you know, I'm not sure if they're a number one or, you know, we've got a few number ones. And depends on the night and the matchups, things like that. But when your best players play the right way, it means a lot to your team. And, you know, we showed some clips this morning of Ashton Calder finishing hits, having good stick. Certainly that first goal in the first couple minutes of the game was a great way to start it. But they, along with most of our team, I thought our habits were really on point. We played the right way. Even when the lead got big, you know, we didn't. A lot of teams, you have a tendency to start cheating and getting on the wrong side of pucks and hoping for some more offense, but our guys played the right way for 60 minutes, and I think that's part of the reason why you saw, you know, the results the way they were. So, again, we've got to do it again tonight. It's one game, and it's beyond us, not behind us now. So we've got to come back and be a little bit better. There's seasons on the line, so we know exactly what we'll see from a very well-coached, very tenacious Huntsville team with, you know, a really good goaltender. We got to them early last night, and that helped. But Fessenden is very capable of stealing games. So we got to move on.
There's a confidence about this team right now, Damon, and it's not, you know, this is one of the old tropes about sports, right? You know, you don't want to get overconfident, and, you know, they might come out and, you know, underestimate them tomorrow. I don't see that with this group because, and I mentioned this with Bill last night, we've gotten to know some of these players, and we know this coaching staff, and that's not really in the DNA of these guys. I mean, these guys are very professional. They're businesslike. They treat every game one like the next. And, you know, we've seen them, you know, one night have a bad night, come back and take care of business the next night. We've seen them have great nights and have the same approach the next day. It's a new game. It's 0-0 on the scoreboard. Time to come out and do your job. They're very professional about all this.
Yeah, and I would add, too, that, you know, some of those games where we've given up an early goal or, you know, gone down by a couple, you know, we haven't gotten away from our game plan. We've stayed with it. So it comes down to your locker room and a lot of that. You know, hopefully it starts with the coaching staff, but you need great leaders in your locker room. We've talked a ton about the senior class and a ton of helping Ocean Calder in there with him as an assistant captain as a junior. But our seniors set the tone for us, and they've done a really, really good job for us through all those different highs and lows and different game situations. Like you said, coming off a good win or maybe you know, going down. You know, we haven't, I think Mankato is the only time we lost two games in a row that series. So we haven't faced that often, but, you know, our seniors have showed up and led very well. I think when you look at Alex Ambrosio and Chase Gamlin right now, they're playing probably as well as any line in our lineup. And, you know, we've got two seniors. They got Benny Post with a freshman on the other wing with them. But our seniors have, you know, they deserve all the credit they've been heaped on, really, because of the job they're doing. Not only play on the ice, but the way they show up day to day and lead in the locker room and have us ready to play.
Lakers won 6-1 last night. Tonight's game, 4:35, our pregame show on today's hits, 99.5 Yes FM and flowhockey.tv. A big game for Lake Superior State. Again, for the second time in a couple of years, the Lakers with a home series, finishing second in the WCHA standings, the team's highest league finish in 25 years. It's a special group of seniors, but I think it's a testament to the work that you guys have put in as a staff. And I see there's certain areas of focus that each of you guys have brought in as a staff, right? I mean, for you, you know, a big emphasis, in your early coaching days, one of the big things that you did, particularly at Michigan Tech, was the penalty kill. This is an excellent penalty kill. Mike York, you know, working with a lot of the guys on faceoffs. This is a really good faceoff team now. Zach Sizek working with the goaltenders. Merrick's Mittens has turned into a monster. Nick Kossoff had tremendous development, too, with Zach Sizek in the program. Each of you guys on the staff brings different things, and you can just see the growth in these players. You can see the development in these areas, and also being able to take these components and put them together to become much more complete individual athletes and use that to build a complete team.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things I'm really pleased about and think that, you know, you don't like to sit here and talk a lot about yourself, the accomplishments and things like that, but I think our development model has been really good. You know, we've had guys like Chase Gamlin who, you know, as a freshman was in and out, probably sat more than he played, and then, you know, sophomore year takes a little step, and now he's a regular contributor. You know, Ambrosio, somewhat of a similar path. You know, Miro Muka is another guy that you know, I remember after I came his freshman, sophomore year, you know, he wanted to come sit down and asked us if we believed in him, if there's a spot in our lineup for him. And, you know, we let him know that we absolutely believe in him and felt like he could play a big role on our team. And, you know, now he's with Hampus Eriksson and Yuki, and they may play the other team's top line most nights. He's contributing offensively fairly regularly and is a very good player for us. So I think the development thing is what I really credit the staff with, from Mike Gruden and Mike York and Zach Sizek, you know, building relationships with these guys. To let them know, you know, their roles and where we see them not only today, but a year or two or 3 years from now, and, you know, doing that job. So that's important to me. And I think as a leader, you know, I don't like to micromanage. I want these guys to take their skill sets and their job descriptions of where they do. And like you said, we all have some different roles and responsibilities and, you know, be fairly hands off, you know, certainly challenge them and push them and ask probing questions, but let them do their job and get out of the way in some ways. And the last thing I thought about this morning, as I was driving before team meeting and things like that, is, you know, I was away from the team for 14 days or so, I think, with the COVID pause and you know, what we went through, and we didn't have, you know, the whole team at some of that, but I missed practices leading up to a series. I missed a game, and I think Mike and Zach in particular, along with Dugan and Pat Sarney and Taylor Brown, just they deserve a lot of credit. They've done a great job, getting to know our team and pushing them and knowing when to pull back and then leading the program, certainly, you know, all the time, but when I was out in particular, did a really good job. So it's a staff that has great chemistry, and I think that rubs off a little bit. I remember John Cooper from Tampa Bay talking about it. I think after he started to prove himself 2, 3, 4 years into Tampa, he finally kind of had his ownership group let him make his own coaching hires. You know, he didn't have an NHL background, so they kind of forced him to have some NHL guys on staff early on, or suggested or whatever. And once Coop showed that he was going to win at that level like he's done anywhere else, he was able to hire his own guys. And he talked about you can't fake it in the coach's room. If the coaches are on the same page, you don't walk into the locker room on the ice and hide that from the players. So I think our chemistry amongst the staff is really strong, and very, very pleased we have that group around us.
Matt Pocket, Damon Whitten, Lakers game 2 in a best of 3 against Alabama Huntsville tonight, 4:35 on Yes FM. You can't necessarily have the same approach with every group, right? Different teams, different players, different people just react to different ways of being being players, being teammates, being leaders, all of these different things, right? Every human being is different, right? So not every group of players is going to respond the same way to every message. How do you learn to read a team, or is that part of your recruitment process, looking for guys that fit a certain mold that you feel will respond to certain challenges and certain messages in a particular way?
Yeah, that's a great question, and you're absolutely right. You know, not just like you said, every individual is unique. Every team is unique and responds in different ways and has a different pulse and heartbeat. And I think that's something that was a really good lesson as I, you know, came to Lake State in the head coaching role. There was a season or two where I kind of looked back and kicked myself, where I thought maybe we had really strong leadership and, you know, we didn't, inject ourselves too much in the locker room in certain situations. And then when it was too late, or even postseason, we said, man, this team wasn't really quite built to handle this situation. They need to do more here and there. So, we've done a lot more in the offseason to build our leadership and our upperclassmen into leaders. Certainly, like you said, through the recruiting process, that does have an impact on what you're looking for. And I can remember my first year or two, we didn't have much life. And, you know, it was just a quiet locker room. And, you know, we moved the ping pong table right into the locker room so guys would compete a little bit, bring some energy. And, you know, so that was a big key early on, the first 2 or 3 recruiting classes, guys who were going to bring energy and, you know, excited to be at the rink every day. And not that they weren't, it was just a quiet group. And that's hard to, you know, when you're in a sport like hockey with a really long season up here in the UP, it's gray and you know, snowy, and you know, you've got to be excited to come to the rink. And we all have such a passion for the game that you want that energy, excitement brought in every day. So I think it's a little everything. It's a recruiting process. It's certainly getting to know your players and reading them. And like I said, we don't always get it right, you know, but we're fortunate with this group. They don't need a ton with this senior class. We had a really good offseason with them, and then they put some process pieces in place of how we wanted to play week to week, and what we wanted the teams to kind of say after we played them, and kind of came up with a team motto, and they've really taken ownership of that area.
Damon Whitten, your time at MSU as a player, as a volunteer assistant, then Wayne State, Michigan Tech, how did these experiences shape your coaching philosophies? Because I think you need to have basic principles, right? Things that you're trying to achieve tactically, philosophically, all of these things. How did your days as a player and as a young coach working your way through the ranks, how did that shape your fundamental philosophies?
Yeah, great question again. A lot of different ways. You know, I was very, up here, our fans know Coach Mason, you know, started the program here at Lake State. And I think until the last couple of years, Jerry York, I believe, passed him, but was the all-time winningest coach for many years, and just an amazing coach. And, you know, his passion for the game, his organization, his details were just off the charts. So I felt like, you know, very fortunate to be in that lab with Coach Mason. I wish I would have got to be on staff with him for a little bit, but he had moved on to the athletic director role when I was back working at Michigan State, which was okay because then I got Rick Conley, another great Laker and former captain and national championship coach here at Lake State. So certainly those are two big influences. And I think, you know, opposite in a lot of ways. You know, as detailed and as, I guess, kind of managing as Coach Mason was, I think Coach Conley a little bit the other way, where he really related to his play. He was ahead of his time, probably, in player relationships. You know, back when I played, there wasn't a lot of that, but I think Coach Conley was ahead of his time to be so well-connected with a lot of his players and have them take ownership and lead a little bit more. So, you know, a couple different approaches that I learned both, and I always kind of wanted to be right in the middle of those two. And then I think, you know, back at Michigan Tech with Mel, with Coach Pearson, who's, you know, doing a great job at Michigan now, was really impactful, too, in terms of building a roster. And you know, I think we've seen some of that impact here with a guy like Diego and Max, you know, guys who have led the country in scoring, you know, trying to recruit and build, you know, a skilled and deep lineup throughout. You know, we don't want to go build a fourth line who can't play and score goals and things like that. And certainly a D core that's very involved offensively and contributes and skates with mobility and puck possession, things like that. So, you know, a lot of different influences over the years. I certainly didn't hit everybody. Bill Wilkinson, a longtime coach at Western Michigan. I worked with at Wayne State. And, you know, Dave Shyack was a really big influence in my time at UAA, and he's now at St. Cloud and has a really good team out there. So a lot of impacts, and, you know, you try to steal all the best you can from everybody, and maybe sometimes you learn, hey, this is something that I don't like the way they do this, or, you know, I'd like to tweak this a little bit. But I've been fortunate to be around some great people and, you know, tried to learn from all of them.
So looking back a little bit, because, you know, these are some of the stories that, you know, I think we sometimes take some of this stuff for granted, right? We just, you know, kind of assume, you know, oh, well, you know, Damon Whitten, he played at Michigan State and, you know, was in the pros, yada, yada, came up as a coach. But there's a story here, right? I mean, you were a player, a very successful player at Michigan State. You went into the pros. Eventually, you got into coaching. But found an interesting article from, oh, goodness, 2004 now. I'm pretty good at digging up some of this old stuff here. But back when you were doing color commentary on the Spartan Radio Network and then transitioning into being a coach, what were those years like for you? And I can tell, you know, you've always had an appreciation for the job of media. You've always been one of the more media-friendly coaches that I've ever come across. And that shouldn't be surprising because you did this job once upon a time, too.
Yeah, it was part of my grad assistant. So when I stopped playing and went back to Michigan State, I was working on my master's, and I was a grad. Back then they had grad assistant coaches. And then part of it, you know, I could do the color commentary for games and, you know, make a little bit of extra money because my I guess it was my girlfriend at the time, but now my wife, Angie, you know, we were both in school and pretty poor and, you know, all that stuff. So it was some good side gig there and be at the games. It was frustrating at times because I wanted to be on the bench and I wanted to be, you know, a little bit tighter on game day operations with Coach Conley. But it was great to learn, you know, Matt, as you know, ability to, you know, think on the spot and react, and, you know, certainly it's different than play-by-play and, you know, just putting that color commentary in. So I think it was a very beneficial, you know, from that way to kind of understand that side of it behind the scenes a little bit, but also just how to speak publicly and, you know, find the right times to interject and, you know, be clear and concise. And I'm a pretty excitable guy, so sometimes I have a hard time you know, slowing down a little bit, and that helped as a young coach to breathe a little bit and slow down and get a clear, concise point apart. But I enjoyed it. You know, Scott Moore still makes the calls there. He's been with Michigan State Hockey a long, long time. And a lot of those GAs and volunteers who came up to Michigan State have all spent time doing that color with Scott Moore, and it was a really enjoyable experience for me.
Laker hockey again, 4:35 on today's Hits, 99.5 Yes FM. Lakers set to take on Alabama Huntsville. Game 2 in a best of 3. Lakers won 6-1 last night. Game 2 tonight at Able Arena. A question that came into us at the broadcast booth last night, and I talked about this a little while ago with Scott Nason here on Coach's Corner on Radio Sioux, but Lakers for an at-large bid. And I think there's kind of two components to it, and I wanted to get your thoughts too, but I think the first component is, you know, right now 12th in the pairwise, right? So if the season ended today, which it doesn't, of course, you know, would the Lakers be in? And I think there's a good shot at it, but season doesn't end today, and I think you need to keep winning, again, to keep scoring points, and in the event that the Lakers were to lose, right, you're going to get knocked back a little bit to build up enough cushion to survive that knockback and still be in consideration for an at-large. I think chalk too, right, if say Minnesota wins the Big Ten tournament, right? Well, that's expected, so that doesn't really play with the at-large slots a whole lot. But if, say, Penn State wins the Big Ten tournament, uh-oh, well, that's a spot that you weren't exactly counting on going to that team. So now that changes the math for everybody else in the at-large equation a little bit. So it's an interesting circumstance to be in, right, being talked about for an at-large. Of course, this can all be rendered moot by winning the WCHA tournament, but sure. What do you think about this, and what have you heard and gathered about that possibility?
Right. Well, like you said, we control our own destiny, so we want to win games and keep going. You know, that's one area of it. We can take that out of the equation and go. Yeah, certainly, you know, we're gonna root for no upsets. Like you said, the Penn State or anybody that upsets a regular season champion or a team high up is a spot that's being taken away, and that's going to affect some teams on the bubble or, you know, fighting for those last few spots. You know, I don't know. It's interesting. You know, I try to not spend much time looking at some of that, but under my attention, some of the national writers, you know, they have Bowling Green and Bemidji ahead of us and some, and to me, that's, you know, that's media. I'm gonna kind of bank on the fact of the coaches on the NCAA committee, and I happen to be on the regional committee that we're doing this year because of the lack of non-conference games. But to me, it's pretty easy. You know, we're a team that should get at least two teams in. I think this year it should be three teams because we've got such a good league this year. But we should be the second WCHA team in. It's pretty clear cut. We came in second place. You know, we went down, swept Bowling Green at Bowling Green. We took 4 or 6 points at Bemidji. You know, it's an unbalanced schedule this year in terms of home-away balance. So we happen to play, you know, the third-place team and the fourth-place team in their buildings and gave them a little bit of advantage, but we went in one games there. So, you know, the one area that helped ourselves tremendously was beating Mankato. We didn't do that, so that's a stumble there. But, you know, for me and where I sit, you know, we're a multi-team league for bids in the NCAA tournament, and we've got to be the best representative. So, you know, that's where it stands today, and we've got to keep doing our job.
You're a busy guy with a busy day in front of you. We'll let you go in a minute, but real quick, some interesting results last night in the WCHA. Bemidji State 3-1 winners over Michigan Tech. Minnesota State scoreless with Ferris State until midway-ish through the third period. Then they put 3 on the Bulldogs, but that was an interesting scoreline to watch. And how about Northern Michigan? Went down 1-0, scored 4 in a row on Bowling Green, and then had to hang on and win 4-3 there. So interesting results. And the Laker game, you know, probably one of the few moments in this first round of games where you're looking at it and going, well, that's kind of what you expected to happen. Everything else was madness.
Yeah, and tight games, you know, so it's not easy this time of year. And playoffs, everybody's ready to play, and everybody's got good goaltending. So it was nice from our point of view to score some goals. I think both Zach Sizek and Mike York, you know, late in the week said that they felt like Northern was going to go in and win. I'm not sure about the series, but, you know, make it tight and go. So they kind of pegged that. I wasn't so sure because I think playing at Bowling Green is a really tough thing to do. You know, and we got to watch some of the Bemidji Tech game after we finished up. And, you know, Tech's playing well, you know, and a little bit snake-bitten to score. But they're playing really well, getting their chances, and it's a really good series. So it's going to be interesting, you know, tonight after we're done to check scores and see what went on and see if Bowling Green can respond in their old building. But, you know, it's a great time of year because, you know, you are excited. Obviously, our task is to worry about Huntsville and have the team prepared. But you quickly turn the page after and bounce around and see what happens. And, you know, there's another one of those games. I think Denver-Omaha plays 2:30 Central, I believe it is. And, you know, there's a game. Omaha's a bubble team, you know. And to me, they don't have many or you know, maybe one or so wins against kind of a top team or, if you talk basketball analogy, a quad one team. So Omaha has had a pretty solid year, but most of their wins have come against the bottom teams in that league. And it'll be interesting, you know, if you know, Denver wins, you know, might keep them out of the tournament, you know, coming out of a strong NCHC. So there's a lot of scoreboard watching this time of year, and, you know, we'll get to that after we worry about Alabama-Huntsville.
All right, Damon, we will see you tonight, 4:35 on YesFM and flowhockey.tv. Lakers Chargers game 2 in this best of 3. Thanks for doing this morning. Appreciate it, and I'll catch you at Able Arena later.
Okay, we'll talk to you tonight. Thank you, Matt.
All right, Coach's Corner on 1230 WSOO. Scott Nason joining us here just a little while ago, too. Thanks to him and Laker head coach Damon Witten. This is 1230 WSOO. Remember, Sioux High girls basketball 145 this afternoon with Dave Watson as the Blue Devils head down to DeWitt. I'll see you in just a couple of minutes with more music ahead here on Radio Sioux.